This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 61 with career and life fulfillment specialist, Joe Wu Wachowski.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things equal.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. This is again the Angles of Latitude podcast, and I am so glad you're here with me today. This is the show again where we talk with fellow creators about how they found their true groove in life by doing work they love and impacting people around the world. And every Thursday we publish another conversation with a successful entrepreneur, expert, or artist about how they got to where they're at and how they've achieved their own personal freedom. You know, it's our hope that this show will inspire you to take charge of your own life by hearing what's possible, by bringing you individuals who have taken a leap of faith and are out there doing their own meaningful work. My name is J.C. Preston. I'm the founder of New Inceptions, a website dedicated in helping people live charged lives by doing awesome work and living a lifestyle they've chosen. Now a word from Fizzle.co. Do you ever find yourself subscribing to all kinds of email lists to get free tips and tactics all over the web? You know, eventually those emails want you to go buy into a course, but you really don't have the money to be able to do that. And then you go subscribing to another list, hoping that they'll fill in the missing pieces that the last email list didn't tell you. What are you doing, honestly? I mean, think about how much time you could be saving if you actually had a plan when it came to building your online business. But again, there's that money thing. What if I told you for about a dollar a day, you could get access to everything you needed to know to build your business just when you needed it? And on top of that, you could ask world-renowned experts every Friday questions you might have. And more, you could be backed up by community that was trying to do the exact same thing you are, which means they wouldn't let you quit. If that sounds like something you might be interested, you should definitely check out Fizzle.co. And I'm telling you, there's nothing else like it on the web that I've seen. They're setting the trend over there. And again, if you go to newinceptions.com/fizzle, you'll be able to access everything I mentioned for free for 5 whole weeks. And again, that's 5 whole weeks of free training and community support. Again, go over to newinceptions.com/F-I-Z-Z-L-E. Okay, on this session of the ALL podcast, I get the chance to talk with Joe Wu Wachowski. Joe is a career coach for people who don't necessarily want to start their own business. So you might be wondering why I'm having him on the show. Well, truth of the matter is he's quite qualified to talk about coaching in general. And a lot of us are interested in becoming coaches, so I thought I'd have him come on to talk about that a little bit from his perspective. And so this conversation, we talk about how he became a coach, what kind of clients he likes working with, and if you are looking for a coach, what all you should be looking for yourself if you think that that might be a next step or something you might do in the near future. And on top of that, we actually talk about his podcast as well. So if you're the type of person who has thought about being a coach, but you've been wondering, what you should focus on and, helping people, then this chat's definitely going to help you out. You know, and as beginners, many entrepreneurs struggle to figure out what they should be doing because, you know, they're just so good at so many different things. It can be really hard for us to focus on picking just that one aspect of ourselves to help others with. But just like cleaning out a huge mess out of a garage, you know, you got to start somewhere. So you might as well start in a certain area and expand from there. And that's what Joe did. So that said, show notes are available at newinceptions.com/61. And I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Hey guys, welcome back to the show. I'm JC, and this is another solo edition of the Angles of Latitude podcast. Today I'm going to be joined by Joe Wu Rutowski, and personally I'd call Joe a 6 year older version of myself, actually. And like me, he did everything that you're supposed to do in life, go to school, get good grades, get a secure job afterwards. But in 2012, he started on his path to becoming a well-known and respected life coach. And he's even a firewalk instructor like Tony Robbins. And a few months back, I actually bumped into Joe as he was developing a program for primary school students to help them be successful in life. And since then, we've been chatting back and forth about one thing or another. And, you know, I was like, well, shoot, let's just get you on the show and kind of talk about some of the things that you're doing in your work, and pretty inspirational stuff to me. But definitely kindred spirits, and I'm thrilled to have him on today. So without further delay, what's up, Joe?
What's going on, JC? Thanks so much for having me, man. Appreciate this. This is awesome. Yeah. Looking forward to it.
Total pleasure. Total pleasure. And like I said, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, you and I have very similar interests and love helping people with very similar things. And, you know, you're more on the career path, where I'm more on the entrepreneur path. So, you know,
right.
Definitely, yeah, good to have, you know, have someone on that compliments what I'm doing. So, you know, something that is mentioned in your bio is that you actually had a lemonade stand when you were 5 years old, and later you got into film and television. So you've always been a creator, I guess you could say.
Right.
Can you tell me about growing up? What did your folks do, and what kind of got you into that stuff?
Well, my dad worked for Sears for 34 years, so he was the corporate America person of the family. So he worked his way up from mailroom all the way up to vice president at Sears, and had a long and great career. And my mom had worked at some various jobs, and then when she had me, she decided to stop working and focus on me and help me out. So it was a great childhood. You know, they let me be very creative, very open. So as you mentioned, I had the lemonade stand. They did a paperboy route. I got my working papers at 13. So I was a worker and a creator. And one of the things that I started taking an interest in was film and television production. Mm-hmm. In 1985, a movie called Back to the Future came out, and I was just totally enamored with the special effects and the whole concept of time travel. So that's what started me getting into like film and television. So I built like a whole little mini set in my basement, and we took a camera and just went and had a blast with it. So it was really amazing, and just let me have my creative freedom.
Cool. Cool. Who, do you remember any idea of like where the lemonade stand came from? Cause I always kind of wanted to, but I never really had a push to do it. So it never happened.
Right. Yeah. For me, it was, you know, my mom had said one day, I remember, gosh, it was probably 6 or 7. And I remember seeing hockey players like every Saturday near the end of our street. There was an area, it was like kind of like a triangle, and people would walk their dogs, and these kids would basically play street hockey on roller skates and stuff. And they'd be there every Saturday, even in the winter, even when it's snowing and raining. And I remember saying to my mom one day, I said, they must be really thirsty and hot because they're sweating. And she said, you know, well, you offer them lemonade. And I had my little red flyer wagon, and off I went and got some lemonade, put in cups, and basically was charging 5 cents at the time back in the early 1980s. And it became a tradition, basically. And I remember a couple times I was sick and the kids actually came knocking on the door. We want lemonade. I wasn't up there a couple times. So they really loved what I did, and I was good at it.
Cool. Cool. And then as far as your parents, and you know, we'd mentioned that you are a firewalk instructor. I'm going to go a little bit of a Tony Robbins question here on for you.
Yeah.
Between your parents, who did you seek approval from more?
Definitely my mom. You know, my dad was, like I said, the corporate person. So he was traveling a lot. He was always there. It was great. But my mom was a little bit more around, you know, mm-hmm. growing up. And so I'd be seeking approval from her. And you know, of course my dad as well, but more so my mom.
And what did you have to do to please her?
A lot of it was just, you know, just be good, you know, just, you know, do what she said, do what she asked, you know, clean my room, you know, do those things, the chores around the house. I mean, she was very good with me. You know, as a kid, you know, growing up, you know, you get home from school, you change your clothes, you just throw them on the floor near the hamper. You don't put them in the hamper. And then you go out and play. So you get another set of clothes on. And then I was very active. And so I go play basketball or football and then come in for dinner, you know, change clothes again into another set of clothes and go out and play again until 9 o'clock at night. So basically around 8 years old, my mom's like, I'm going to teach you this thing here. It's called a washing machine. And this thing over here is an ironing board. So she had me ironing and washing my clothes at eight. And she's like, look, if you're going to leave it on the floor and not put it in the hamper, guess what? You're going to learn this. And she taught me it. And to this day, I actually iron my clothes, you know, for my wife, my kids, a lot of people. So it's just something that stuck with me.
Really? Yeah, I was I was kind of the same way when it came to dinner. My mom would always kind of get home late. And so I was usually, because she'd be tired or just trying to follow up with different things that, you know, she'd more or less, being a teacher, she'd bring stuff home and would still be working on it. So, you know, yeah, I ended up learning to be the cook. And now in my relationship, I'm the cook while Maria takes more of the, she's the ironer. Cause I can do it, but you're almost going to get a burn. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. First couple of times, absolutely. There's stuff burning. She's like, what's smelling there? But you know, I learned it. And for me, it's like, it kind of became part of me. Like my clothes need to look sharp. I need to have those creases in the shirts and pants. And that's just what kind of set me going. And ever this day, I mean, I iron even when I'm on the road.
Yeah. Cool. So it sounds to me like, you know, both you and me, I mean, we kind of share that we had to be responsible, I guess you could say, for our parents. And for me, I know that that's why money plays such an important decision on what major I was going to be personally going into. You know, if you wanted to be well, for me, it was become an engineer. And because I liked video games and computers, you know, I chose to be an electrical engineer because it's like, well, that just makes sense because I like electronics and let's just go with the whole electrical engineer thing. What went into you choosing your major?
So what went into it was I loved film and television. I loved the special effects. You know, I love to create really cool effects and sort of, you know, show the family like, hey, this is the stuff that we did, the videos that we made, and I got my cousins involved and my aunts and uncles. So we just started a tradition, like every, you know, Christmas and Thanksgiving, we get the video camera out and do like little bits of videos. And it just stuck with me. I really enjoyed it. Just the, you know, you never know what was going to happen and everything was always different. So that really, you know, propelled me into high school. So when I got into high school, I was running the homeroom TV show. So every week we had a homeroom show. So I was directing that. And I just fell in love with it. It was a neat thing to me to, you know, be behind the scenes, helping people direct people and getting some really good messages out. And then I went to college and did the same thing, you know, helped with the shows there and produced a lot of funny little skits. And we would always, you know, have the camera going. So it just stuck with me.
Right. Right. And so your major was then in film or?
Well, it was communication. So okay. I went to Villanova University. So they didn't have, at the time, they didn't have a specific major in film and television. So it was communications as a broad with kind of a concentration in film.
Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha. And were you like in any kind of like, what's stand up comedy, but not ad hoc comedy?
Oh, I think I know what you're thinking about. Yeah. So we had a lot of different shows at school. You know, they were one of the big event centers. They'd have bands and stuff. So I would always be videotaping the bands. I'd be playing a part in it and things like that. We did have some stand-up comedy or some ad hoc skits. Like there was poetry writing and things like that. So I would take part in that. I'd video a lot of the people, you know, reading their poetry and put it together into a nice montage. And people loved it. And it was a great thing.
Cool. Cool. So if you had to choose it all over again, you probably would take the same major.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I think it really served my creative juice as well. You know, I'm a creative and analytical person, so I think it was a nice fit. And yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't change anything about it.
After graduation, you had a normal career for several years. How well did you survive as a square block in a circle hole, though? Or would you describe yourself as that?
Yeah, that's a great way of, you know, saying it. You know, after I got out of school, you know, something in me changed a little bit. And I, you know, to this day, can't really figure out what specifically was it, but I just sort of really settled in my life. And after school, you know, I was kind of floundering a little bit, but I just took a job in corporate America in, you know, financial services, like in banking, like in call centers. And in the beginning, it just, you know, it was me. It's like, oh, I'm just getting a paycheck. And there was the allure of money. Wow, I'm getting a paycheck and getting good money. And I was like, oh, great. I can go out and do this and I can do that. And, you know, it just stuck with me. In the beginning, you know, it was a little bit of a struggle making that adjustment. But once I got going, you know, I'm a very competitive person, so I did very, very well, you know, in corporate America. But I still kind of felt something was sort of missing. I really missed that, the creative piece of, you know, the film and television. Mm-hmm. So in essence, I just kind of settled.
Gotcha. Yeah. And I think a lot of people do, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And so you eventually realized that you wanted to be a career coach. Was that a specific moment or more of a series of moments, or how did that work?
Yeah, so it was a series of moments. So I was going along in my career and things were great. You know, I was working my way up the corporate ladder, you know, and you know, I was having fun with it, but I still felt, you know, there's a little piece of me that was missing. Like, wow, like I'm just not fully satisfied and happy. And the money was coming in, it was great. People I was meeting, it was great. I was traveling around a lot. And I think it was a series of moments. I worked for the Red Cross and I wound up leading a program that outsourced all of our jobs. Mm. So I got out of there. And at that point, I was a little bit, I wouldn't say depressed, but a little sad. And you're like, wow, like, you know, every couple of years, I'm out of a job in corporate America. It's just the way things are going. And I remember working on a lot of different programs for the Red Cross, like career laddering, you know, intern type stuff for the Red Cross. And I said, you know, there's something here, because the people I'm hiring, I just see people come in and out and they just don't seem to love what they do. And I said, you know, that's a sort of the same thing. I enjoy this, but I don't really love it. I'm not truly passionate about it. It doesn't get me up every morning. So that was sort of the first step to say, okay, you know, I need something different here. Maybe it's time I go into film and television. And I started getting into life coaching a little bit, even though I was already in it before, but I started taking some courses with a guy who studied under Tony Robbins. And like you mentioned about the firewalking, did all that. And it just kind of, one day I woke up, said, you know, I said, there's really something missing here. I see people and they're like zombies. I kind of almost had like an awakening. Like, you know, I was going about my day like everybody else, you know, the Monday blues, you know, Wednesday, it's hump day. And, you know, hey, it's Friday. Great. Let's party. It's the weekend. And that's all you would look forward to. And I'm like, wow, I'm like, you know, I need something different. So it was a series of those moments. And once that light came on, I woke up, I was like, I got to do this. And the career coach is really where I need to go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And I mean, as you were starting to build that, I mean, do you remember some of the early hurdles that you had to do to make that transition?
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, anytime you leave that steady, you know, 9-to-5 paycheck job, really good paying job, and you get out of corporate America, you know, and you say, oh, I'm going to start a business or I'm going to start this up. And people look at you kind of funny and they say, what are you talking about? Like, everybody doesn't want to do risk. And every, probably one of my family members was like, you're nuts. You're absolutely nuts. And that was like the first hurdle. And it's still a hurdle. You know, I'm a few years into this and it's still growing, but you still get that negativity. You know, you still get people saying, what is he doing? Or why are you doing that? You should just, you know, get the 9-to-5 job. And, you know, then obviously the name Joe Wu was a nickname I was given by a manager. And everybody around me is like, I just don't like that. I just don't get that. And I would sit there and explain it. I'm like, guys, I'm like, it's all about the name and the brand. It really fits who I am. That's my personality. And so, you know, that was another hurdle. And then the technology side, you know, I'm good with technology, but I don't know how to build a website. That was hard for me. And just even the sales process, I was afraid of sales and asking people for sales. You know, get that, am I really worth this? You know, am I worthy of people's business? So you cross a lot of things. You really do when you start an entrepreneurship. It's a whole host of things that come at, you know, that come at you, I think, in sequential order in a way.
Yeah. I in fact, just yesterday, actually released a post called 6 Steps to Share Your Ideas Around Friends and Family. And it, I mean, it can really be a pain in the rear, because it's like, how long do you keep your secret away from those that you care about currently? And what happens if they don't take, you know, to it as much as you would have hoped that they did?
Yeah. And I think you're always going to have some of that. I think you're always going to have people and, you know, their mind is right. I mean, you know, and they mean well too, you know, they want to, you know, people in life, a lot of us play it safe, you know, and that's what people are doing. So they don't want to see the risk. They don't want to see you get burned, or they want you to, you know, have kids and, you know, they want the kids to go to a great school and things like that. So I think that's where everybody's mindset goes. But when you really look at the end game and the end result, and I asked myself this question when I started this, I said, what would my life look like if I'm, you know, 100 years old in the rocking chair with my grandkids running around still trying to chase them? And it's like, wow, that was the awakening. I'm like, I need to do this. And it's going to be painful, but, you know, and at the end of the day, there's still people that, you know, that kind of knock you. And you get that all the time from emails. And when I'm trying to get people, you know, into my podcast. I still get rejected all the time. And to me now it's a game. I love it. I thrive on that. I'm like, hey, no, reject me. That's fine. I'll get the next one. And I keep getting up and keep going. And that's what you got to do. And you're always going to have some level of people having the negativity around it. And you just got to compartmentalize it and say, you know what? That's who they are. That's their nature. It's not personal against you, but you know what? You just got to get that out of your mind because you have to focus on your business. If you don't, you focus on that, you're done.
Yeah. One of the things that has stuck with me, I was in Amway and still a card carrying member because the excess energy drinks, I love them. There was this guy that talked one time and I forget exactly which speaker it was, but he talked about how the number one thing that people that are really, you know, near the end of their life that he hears them discussing or in general people discuss is that they have that regret. And, you know, the thing is that the world does teach you to conform, but you shouldn't have that regret. And the regret is that maybe I should have spent more time with people. Maybe I should have built that business. Maybe I should have traveled the world, you know, all these different things that people don't get to because they are working that 9 to 5 that maybe they don't even like, which is probably most, I would sense most often the situation that a lot of people are stuck in positions that are not them. And that they're going to have that regret. I mean, I've met people that are happy and thrilled about life at that age. And they're still, you know, they're just, they've lived the life that they wanted to, but it much, much more, ratio wise of people that, you know, just are just like,
oh yeah,
if only sort of thing. So.
Yeah, and there's a lot of that out there. I mean, I would say probably 60-65% of my clients that, you know, I work with are, they have a lot of regrets. And, you know, you're going to have some regrets. You know, you're always going to have, oh, I could have done that or should have. But when you have a ton of regrets that pile up and you can see it in their body language and their personality, you know. And that's the thing, too. Right now, I did a survey a few months ago, and I've seen polls out there, but nearly more than half of people are unhappy in their jobs at some level, and it's just not them because you have corporations that are consolidating. So you get all these other roles that are added to you that are not your skill set or not you. And that's what makes you a little bit, you know, uneasy because you don't really understand what's going on and you just get thrown so much garbage in corporate America. That's why so many people aren't happy. That's a big part of it. And I think I saw a poll a few weeks ago said like 76% of all people in corporate America are unhappy at some level in their job. And it wasn't just like, oh, a little bit. It was, you know, either they're dissatisfied or very dissatisfied. I'm like, wow, that's staggering. Mm-hmm. That just shocks me.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I think that there's a reason why two movies in particular from the 90s still hold true with so many people is The Matrix and Office Space.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, it's just like that. You can't, I don't even know of any movies that have recently come out that do a better job of kind of showing what people feel when you're talking about corporate America. And for me, those came out when I was in high school, and that really kind of made me start, you know, learning about the least entrepreneurship, because I kind of figured that was going to be the way out of doing that. So
yeah, I think both those movies really encapsulate corporate. Yeah, I really see that now that I think about it. I'm like, wow, yeah, The Matrix and all. Yeah, that really is kind of sometimes what it's like.
Yeah. Going into coaching here a little bit, ideally, your clients are, again, these people that for the most part feel like they're stuck or what? What are you looking for?
Right. So I have two types of clients. So the first one I have is the high school senior and the college junior and senior, you know, that are making the transition from school to the working world. They might not be sure of what they want to do or they're not really there. I found that there was a sort of a gap. You know, when you're out of high school and you're not going to college, or when you're in college and you leave the career center and you're out there, you're kind of on your own. So I felt that there was a need, because those first 5 years in your career are so critical. If you don't take care of certain things, like setting up your 401k, starting to save and invest money, doing those little things that I didn't do that really burned me for a while. You know, there's a lot of huge things. And then I helped a professional like myself, for example, who's in corporate America. You get laid off, or you wake up one day and say, you know, I'm just not happy. I want to do something different. So I capture both of those markets because I really feel like that's really where there's such a huge need right now, because so many kids, both parents these days work. You know, back in my day, like we talked about earlier, you know, my mom was a stay-at-home mom for a long time. And so I had one parent. Now both parents work. They work longer hours, they're on call. Yeah. They're answering conference calls at night, you know, weekends. So, you know, so I feel like there's, you know, some help here to help students, you know, make that transition. And I can be that sort of almost like extension of your family to help you. And then the professional who's out there lost, grab them, say, hey, come on in. Let me get my fishing rod really in and let's figure out where you need to go.
Right. And so I guess you could say that you're the being the guidance counselor that should be the one that's in school for the seniors, but because we can go down that path, believe me. But at the same time, then you're the guidance counselor for people that, again, want to do something different. And that's some good work that you're doing there, because people really don't know. I mean, when people come to me, a lot of times they're thinking, okay, I know I want to put my own staple on something, but I don't know exactly what it's going to be yet. Right. And for me, I'm more of the let's start your own business sort of thing, because for me, it's all about personal freedom. And we'll get into this a little bit later here, but, you know, for me, I feel that the number one way, if someone wants to go all the way, like you and I both, to express their true personal freedom, then they're going to have to kind of shed the shackles of corporate America. But not everybody's going to be able to do that. Not everybody wants all that responsibility. And so, yeah, again, you know, maybe, you know, talking to someone like you is definitely more of their thing. So, you know, you actually have several courses and programs that you're already kind of available to people. Let's touch on those a little bit.
Sure.
What was the need that you saw in the marketplace that contributed to their creation for one?
Right. So I have what's called a career prep course, and that's for high school and college students. It's basically getting you ready, you know, for your career. So I saw when I got out of college, I floundered around a little bit. I wasn't sure what I was doing. You know, I remember, and this is maybe almost 20 years ago, it's a little bit better now, but with even like the investing and savings, you know, you get tons of paperwork for your 401k. Like, what the heck do I do with this? And financial planners were there, but they weren't as they are today. And then you've got, well, how do I make these decisions on an employee stock program? Should I invest money? Should I save? Oh, I got credit cards coming at me. Now I got all these offers. What do I do? And then how do I keep myself going in my career? How do I keep the blade sharpened so I can move in my career? And these are a lot of things I didn't do in my first really 10 years in my career. And I lost a lot of opportunities, and I just felt there's such a huge need here. And I went out and did a lot of research, talked to a lot of parents and students, and they're all in the same boat. And I get it. You know, we're all not going to really know what we probably truly want to do, but if we can get on a better trajectory, that's where I come in, you know, with my career prep course. And then the career tune-up course, which is for the established professionals, like, oh crap, I just got laid off. What do I do? I've been in corporate America for 20 years. I haven't interviewed in a while. I've been with the same company, or, you know, I'm a doctor, or maybe I'm a lawyer and I want to do something different. You know, throw my hands up. What do I do? So they come to me and we do a career tune-up where we kind of get under the hood, so to speak, like a mechanic would, and check the oil, you know, check the air filter, see how things are going, get healthy there with the mindset, and then make sure finances are good. And then start to set the things and say, okay, where do you need to go in your career? Where do you want to go? And then we start getting into the sort of the meat and potatoes of it and really drive home a good plan for them to get to their next step in their career and their life.
And really, if someone is wanting to find a coach, I know, you know, when I'm looking for a coach that, you know, they, just like finding a job, you need to ask the questions. You can't be just talked to into hiring someone as a coach. You need to be asking the questions yourself. And I got to ask, what, when someone's looking for a coach, because I know what I'd look for, but what would you recommend to people if they're looking for a career coach, personal coach, any kind of coach really?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of factors that you need to look at. And obviously, the big thing is, you know, a lot of people typically Google career coach or life coach, and you know, first couple names pop up. You definitely want to, you know, do your homework. You want to do your research. You know, everybody should have testimonials, kind of like I do on my website and in my social media. But you should be looking for testimonials. Has this person, you know, been out there a while? Are they really good at what they do? And then also too, when you start to narrow down, say, okay, these people look interesting, I might want to call them, see if there's a connection there. You know, most coaches offer sort of a complimentary session where kind of sit down and feel if it's a good fit. And I always say, if they don't offer a complimentary session, then you really shouldn't, you know, go with that coach. They're more about the money, but get in there, get your feet wet and say, okay, is this person really good? Are they going to help me and sort of see where this is going? And then, you know, obviously with the coaching industry, there's no real certification out there. I mean, there are some for some things, you know, like skill sets of psychology and neurolinguistic programming and things like that. Look for some of those certifications, because if those people have certifications like I do, then, you know, you get somebody that really is caring and really is somebody that wants to help and not just sets up a shop and says, oh, I'm a coach here. Because there's a huge danger out there right now with so many wannabe coaches out there, and you can really put yourself in jeopardy if you go that route. But yeah, definitely do those things, and you know, you'll find somebody really good. There's a lot of great people out there.
You brought up therapy. Can you explain what you believe the difference is between, say, a therapist, a psychologist, maybe, and a coach? Because some people might actually be kind of confused on what those people do.
Yeah. And I think that I see it all the time too. And I have all the respect for therapists and psychologists, and people do need those things sometimes, but I feel like the difference is that life coaching and career coaching for me is like, it's more finite. You know, we get to an action plan, we figure out what's going on in your head. We solve those problems. You know, we attack the problems head up, and then we create the plan, and then we create the, you know, the goals and say, okay, this is when you're going to get this job, or this is when you're going to do this, or this is your, these are your goals, your milestones, and your outcomes. Where I think, as you know, therapy and psychology seems to sometimes keep going on and on. You know, you keep going back and you keep doing it. And I actually had somebody ask me that question a few months ago and said, well, maybe I need a therapist, maybe I need a life coach. And I said, well, I'm not sure. What are you looking for? I just need someone to talk to and figure this out. And then I went into that, you know, same kind of spiel. I said, well, this is where a therapist goes. And I actually had somebody who said, yeah, I went to a therapist, and I'm going to a therapist for 3 or 4 years, and I'm just feel like I'm talking about the same thing. And I think sometimes they get caught up in the problem, not the solution. And I think that's the other differentiation is life coaching, you solution things. You know, you got to get out of where you are, get to a solution so you can grow and move forward in your life.
Yeah. Yeah. And another thing about coaching is, in particular, is there's a difference between coaches and people who actually are more of a consultant or a teacher.
Right.
And one of the reasons why I don't coach as much as I do is because I know I have a natural, being an engineer, I have more of a natural tendency of being like, can I be frank with you? Like right away.
Yeah.
And right, be like, right. This is what you should look at, as opposed to. And one of the things that I think that coaches are blessed with are having that, it's not so much the listening capability, because I'll listen because I really need to know what the problem is before I know, give my solution, but the patience. Like, to be a coach, you really have to have patience with someone.
Yep.
And I'm not saying that I'm not patient. It's just that if I was having to do that with the same person and they're kind of going over the same issues over and over and over, that's what drives me kind of crazy. And I don't know. I mean, is that something that you struggle with at all, or is that, or do you kind of have like a little bit of a, maybe some strategy to help bust someone out of getting into a process like that?
Yeah. And I'm pretty good at reading people. You know, I've studied people and I've had so many people work under me and interview people. So I see a lot of common patterns that people have. So I'm able to identify those, you know, fairly easy. So, you know, if I see, you know, session goes on, I do one-on-one coaching, and, you know, the next session, the person's really not made the progress and they're still, you know, I calibrate people each time. You know, I say, okay, where are you at on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, 10 being the best, you know, they're at an 8, next week they come in, they're at an 8. Okay. And if they regress a little bit, I might shake them up a little bit and do something extreme. Like you talked about earlier, I do firewalking. That might be something to get people over their fears or get unstuck. I've walked on broken glass, like shards of broken glass. I get people to do that. And it's all about getting them past, you know, certain fears, or we might, I might do a closed, you know, closed eye technique where we do breathing and meditate a little bit and focus on getting the problem out to the surface so we can solve it. So those are some things how I get people unstuck. And that's the thing too, is you know, as a coach, and that's one of the differentiating things too, I see in the wannabe coaches, a lot of wannabe coaches want to put their map on people. You know, they take this course and they got this, okay, here, I'm going to solve your problem. And I see so many people posting this, oh, I'm changing lives. I'm out there changing lives all weekend. I just had my seminar. I'm like, no, you're not changing their life. You're helping them. Mm-hmm. You're sort of the wheel to help them change. And so that's where, you know, I go is I help them change, but it's really on that person. That's where I have the patience because I know it's in all of us. You know, we have everything in us that we need. We just need to drag it out. So I'm more of a catalyst, the guy that helps pull the stuff out and get you where you need to be.
Yeah. Yeah. So definitely a difference between coaching and consulting.
Yeah, absolutely.
If someone wants to actually be a coach, and this sounds like something that they might actually have the skills for, how would they go about really figuring out if it's right for them? And how would they go about getting started, really?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, you know, like I did, you know, I always like to help people. So I think that's the first thing. You know, you have to ask yourself that question. You know, oh, I'm interested in coaching. Well, do I really want to help people? Am I the person that can help people, you know, solve their problems? And if you can answer that openly and honestly without hesitation, then I think you're more than halfway there. And then I think what you need to do is look at some areas that, you know, there might be some gaps or something that you're very passionate about. And the career coaching thing for me and life coaching came about where, you know, I struggled in my career and I just got tired of hearing no and got tired of posting jobs and going nowhere. And so I was very passionate about that. So you definitely have to have a passion for a certain area because I've seen some really good coaches struggle and you know, they do life coaching and it might be more of like a consultant where, you know, they shouldn't be solving problems. It should just be, hey, let me help you with this or with that. So you do that. And there's a lot of, like we talked about earlier, there's a lot of garbage out there, a lot of courses out there that you have to pay $5,000 to get certified. There's no real certification. I mean, you can set up a coaching shop tomorrow, but what I always tell people is, you got to be open and honest. You got to be legitimate. So, you know, definitely take courses. You know, start with some of the big names that are out there. Obviously, like a Tony Robbins, Robert Kiyosaki, you know, for financials. There's a ton of, you know, coaches out there. Even for sales, there's a bunch of people. So find those top coaches in that area and find out what training programs they have. And you can get trained. They have some certifications that are out there, too,
yeah,
which are great. So that's where I would start.
As far as our team here at New Inceptions, we have Clay, who is certified by Brenda Burchard, and his program. And then Layla is a fitness coach. And so she'll help people, you know, she's with, Beachbody.
And, oh, great.
So awesome. She helps people, you know, ditch the gym and, yep, you know, work out at home and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it's you got to find that fit, and I think and what you really want to help people with, and if you believe that you have patience, you know, and you don't get crazy when they keep, you know, hitting their head on the wall like, you know, I do. then yeah, definitely want to look into a leader in that field.
Absolutely.
Moving on here, you do have a podcast, and you've been a host of that for how long?
For a little over a year now, about a year and a half, actually. So that was one of the big growth opportunities for me. It scared the hell of me to do that. And I just said, you know, I've got to get out there, get my voice out there heard, and I just did it. I said, it's a must, and made it happen. It's been great.
Mm-hmm. And what exactly is it about?
So basically, it's the Joe Wood Career and Life Show, and basically talk about where people want to go in their careers and talk about life, because I think, you know, your life and your career intertwine, because your career, finding your true career path is one of the most important decisions you'll ever make in your life. It's like getting married. It's deciding to have kids. You know, it's not like buying a car. You're always going to be buying cars, but, you know, to find your true calling is a huge, huge decision. So that's really what we focus on. I have a lot of special guests. I've had some celebrities on. I've had just some local people around the country on, because I really wanted to get a good mix of people who are very, very successful and the person who might not be known that's also very successful, to show people that you can be successful really in any career. And it's going great.
There's a lot of different kinds of media out there. Really, and videos with, you know, having high speed internet and all that sort of stuff. really popular right now. Layla does a lot of YouTube videos herself. But what got you into podcasting? I mean, for me, I've always listened to the talk radio, and I've always kind of, you know, you have the voice and you connect with the voice, and it kind of, I don't know if it makes me, I like it because it makes me use my imagination more, or because it makes me actually fixate really more on what they're saying. But for whatever reason, I like audio over video. Call me weird, but that's just the way I am. What got you into podcasting?
I think for me, I just felt it was a great opportunity to get my voice out there. I really felt, you know, I had a very compelling story to tell, and I felt, you know, audio was a great way to tell that, because when you hear somebody talk and sometimes you don't see them, you know, people can use their imagination and put their picture again. And I think that allure of, you know, getting out there, somebody hearing your voice, like you talked about talk radio. I mean, I grew up, you know, at night, you know, listening to the ball games on the radio, some of the great announcers around the country. And I always envisioned what it would be like there. So I always felt, you know, that sense of it. So that's what really kind of got me in there. And I love video as well, too. But there's just something about, you know, the podcasting where you get in there. And then when you can get somebody in there and really question them about how they started and from nothing, and they made themselves into a great success, it's just a wonderful journey you can go on. And, you know, your mind runs like, oh, what's that person doing right now? Or what are they talking about? Or you start picturing things in your mind. So that's the allure of it. And I love it. So I do love audio as well.
Yeah. And another thing is that you can take a podcast with you as opposed to a video where you have to actually watch it. Right.
Right. So, I mean, it's easy to download. So it's there, and you can listen to it on your train to work. You got an MP3 in your car. You could put it in that way and listen to it while you're traveling. It's great.
Anyway, for those of you guys, you know, considering, do I start doing a video thing, or do I, you know, think about where your audience is, really, I guess. And are they going to be, you know, are they commuting to work, or are they going to be spending more time in front of, you know, their computer all the time, or are they out and about, whatever. And that'll be your decision on maybe the media that you should look into. Do you have any decidedly favorite conversations you've had off the air that you wish you had the opportunity to capture on your show?
Yeah, absolutely. I've talked to a couple CEOs that have been out there in corporate America, and, you know, we've had some just very good, humble conversations, and, you know, they just don't want to get on a podcast. It's not their thing, or it's not their thing to get on the radio. They rather focus. So I had a couple CEOs that just talked about their humble beginnings. I bumped into, you know, one CEO that was actually having some challenges with their organization, and it was well known. So I was like, man, that'd be great to kind of just get that out there a little bit and air it out and say, look, you know, we're working on these things, and unfortunately never happened. So there's always, I think, those cases that are out there that you want to interview people.
Yeah. We, you know, as I've been reconnecting into the foundation, because I've had a number of foundation alumni on this show, also had a number of Fizzlers on this show, and the conversations that lead up to the podcast itself, I mean, and afterwards, it's like, oh, I wish we would have captured that. So, you know, I think that having a guest show, while you might not be able to grab everything you want to on that show, unless you're Tim Ferriss, who, you know, happens to host like a 3-hour show,
yeah,
then maybe you might have more. But even there was one Cal Gusman, something like that. I can't think of his last name. But anyway, he's another huge interviewer, and both of his shows were extremely long, but for very good reason. And in it, he's like talking about different stories between, especially the most recent one. Well, the first one, he was talking about how he got into interviewing people, but the second one was with Muhammad Ali, and how he had the opportunity to actually work with Muhammad and get, you know, get to essentially be friends with him over time. So, anyway, being an interviewer really opens you up to having those relationships. And, you know, again, if that's something else that you want to have, you know, create a network really quickly, get into interview based media, whether it's videos or podcasting.
Absolutely. That's huge, Eric, because you can network with so many people and there's so many great sites out there. You know, like yours, you connect with people that just really want to help people and share great stories.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Let me ask you though. I mean, we were just talking about Cal. What's your interview style?
So my interview style really, I think, is a very, very good open style where I think early on when I started out my podcast, I really wanted to script things and get it right. I was so nervous, but I found once I kind of opened it up and said, okay, there's 10 good questions I want to ask. And I keep those 10 good questions in front of me. And, you know, it usually asks the guests like, hey, where'd you start? You know, how'd you work your way up in corporate America? Or what's a thing you learned or very early on where you learned a great lesson from? And, you know, we keep it open like that. But then, you know, if I hear a really good point, what I'll try to do is really get in there and sort of open it up a little bit and ask some follow-up questions. I think it's real important as an interviewee to really ask those follow-up questions to kind of get down a little bit. Because sometimes people may come on and they're nervous and they might not give you a lot of good depth in answers. I'm looking for depth, so I might go one or two layers to uncover some things a little bit. But I still keep it very open, very friendly, because you want to, when you invite people on, you know, it's their time and it's their story. So one, you want it to be about them, but you want to be open and friendly. So it's a warm way to share things.
Yeah. Yeah. There's actually, and going back to Cal's conversation with Tim Ferriss, he was talking about how there's multiple ways of doing it. And it really depends on you. He was talking about some people will have those key questions that you were talking about that they always ask. I think John Lee Dumas does that quite a bit. Like he's boom, 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 boom all the time. Same questions. Or you can be more of like Barbara Walters, where you're kind of like almost like you have a list and then you kind of like pick from that list.
Yeah.
Or then there's another one where it's like, these are the things that I want to talk about. It kind of like you're prepping for a speech. And right. Then you make that list and then you fold up that paper and you put it in your pocket. Or, you know, there's just so many different ways. Whatever, if you want to start a podcast, and especially if you're going to be an interviewer, just whatever works for you is what my recommendation would be.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, there's a certain comfort level and, you know, you have certain styles. Everybody's different. So whatever really makes sense, you know, you put it on paper and see, does this make sense? Does this feel good? And it feels right. And if it does, then go for it.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly. Who do you believe has been, what do you believe has been a major contributor to your overall success of your show? I mean, has it been that open atmosphere that you give your guests? Or, I mean, kind of talk about that and maybe a little bit about what kind of scratch you itch for your listeners as well.
Yeah, I think it's really taking the listeners on a journey. I think what really works well is when you talk to somebody about where they started out in your career. For example, I had the American Red Cross CEO on about 6 months ago, Gail McGovern, and she started from humble beginnings. She started as a bank teller and she worked her way up to like AT&T, became one of the first women as like a senior vice president in that organization of marketing. So she was doing some commercials and doing a lot of great things. And then she went to be a teacher after that at Harvard, and then went to a financial firm, ran it, and then became CEO of the Red Cross. So to really take people on a journey and show people, hey, you know, if you start out from, you know, basically the ground level, you know, and I started out as a phone rep in customer service and worked my way up to senior level positions, here's how you do it. And that's what I like to get out from people is, how did you do it? So what happened next? You know, and you take them on that journey, and it's a great story, and you hear people just like yourself. And I say to people, everybody puts their pants and clothes on the same way. It's just some people might have a higher drive. Some people might have more of a competitive nature, and you really try to find what makes these people tick. So these are some things that people can use to help improve their lives too and get up the corporate ladder.
Right, for sure. Yeah. Speaking of people that have higher ticks, did you hear that Gary V is going to be on a new show, TV show that he's going to be with Will.i.am and some other folks. I mean, he's finally going to be recognized, I think, as an overall celebrity, which is kudos to him for being able to make that jump. But
That's huge.
A little bit out of the way of how Justin Bieber did it, but you know,
right? Yeah, exactly.
But yeah,
Gary's story is amazing. That's a great story. Glad for him. Yeah. He deserves it.
Yeah. So what are, we talked about your coaching, how you got into it, and your podcasting. What are some of the things that you got coming down the line that you look forward to in the rest of 2016 and beyond?
Yeah. So I've just wrapped up what I call my career prep audio course. So it's really sort of an entry level course for students and parents to really get in and help them with, you know, where to find your right career path, set yourself up for financial success and really continued learning. So I felt there was a need, you know, to have a really good entry-level program, you know, that people could use. And like we talked about with audio, that you could take it with you and listen to it anywhere, anytime. And it's basically a lot of my stories about my failures, my successes, my wins and losses, and just in general, a lot of, 20-some years of corporate-level advice from all different levels in corporate America. So I'm real excited to have that launch in about a month, and that'll be available right on my website, which is great. And I think there's a huge need that fills.
Yeah. And were you talking about doing workshops?
Yep. I have some workshops that I'm actually going to do towards the end of the year, some goal setting workshops combined with some fire walks as well. So that's in the works right now. And then next year I'm going to have my workshops for both the students and both the established professionals. It'll be a weekend workshop, basically based off of the career prep course and the career tune-up for both, where you come in and we really kind of, get under the hood even more in person. We do a lot of great things in person, like networking, build your interviewing skills, build your presentation skills and your brand. And I'm excited for it.
Cool. Well, if you have anybody that's wanting to start businesses, send them our way.
Absolutely. Definitely will do. Yeah, and that's the thing, people say, hey, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm like, I need to figure out, or they need some fitness help. That's not my style, but at least I've got a great network where I can say, hey, you got some people over here that I can send you to.
Right. Exactly. Cool. So kind of actually hitting here on near the end of the hour, are you ready for your rapid fire questions?
Absolutely. Let's bring it.
All right. Number one, name me three of your top favorite podcasts you tell others about.
It's a great question. So, Nathan Lack is an entrepreneur. His is To the Top. There's a great sales one out there called The Hardcore Closer, Ryan Stueman. And then Tim Ferriss, obviously. Who doesn't love Tim? I mean, Tim shows are long, but I love it. It's great.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and they're long for a reason. I mean, you get to go a little bit deeper. And I mean, if that's not your thing, you can go to any other. There's plenty of other things for you.
But Rogan's got something.
Yeah. I mean, but yeah, he's definitely the deep master. If you woke up tomorrow as your 10-year-old self and all your memories were still intact, what would you do?
So if I woke up when I was 10, what would I do? I would just go out and just be the creative force that I need to be. Just get out there and get the film and television production. You know, that's right around the age of 10 is when it started. So I would just wake up and just go do it and be fearless.
Yeah. And keep going that direction.
Yep.
Cool. Cool. What is something you believed as a 35-year-old that you'd now tell yourself is completely wrong, and why?
So I had the belief that money was security, money was safe. And I think that's a big mistake that most people make, is that, you get money when you say safe and secure. When you think about it and you can visualize it, you're kind of tightening yourself up. You're safe. You're getting together in a safe place or whatever. Money is really abundance. And I had that, at 35, it's like, oh, money's security and safe. But no, money's abundance. If you think of money as abundance, it's always around you, support all of your needs, and it'll help so many different things. So I looked at that as that was a wrong thing. And now money to me is abundance, and it's always around.
What is one thing that is under $100 that has changed your life?
Wow, there's a lot of good things. I think definitely for me, one thing is my phones. I'm always dropping my phones to break them. So the OtterBox case is yes, a huge thing that's actually, yes, saved me a lot of lot of money.
Yeah.
I also think for me, something that $100 that was really good was the selfie stick. And I know a lot of people don't like selfie sticks, but when I first started out, my videos, they were very choppy, and I was getting crucified by a lot of people. And I like the rawness of it. But I didn't really get turned on selfie sticks. I'm like, oh, I just don't like people showing them around the amusement parks. You see a guy with a selfie stick. And I said, there's something to this, though. And I was able to start shooting really good quality videos. Once I invested in the selfie stick, and it's dirt cheap, my video views really started taking off at that point. And I'm so grateful that I did invest in that.
Yeah. There's actually something that I got recently myself. It's called a Stabilicam.
Ooh, heard of that.
And I'll put that in the show notes, but it's basically something that it balances, you kind of hold on to the middle of it, and it uses the center of gravity to more or less keep the phone, or, well, yeah, you're going to be using a phone or maybe a GoPro, but
right.
Basically it keeps it still, kind of like how you have those in professional video work.
Oh, right.
You have, you know, things that keep the cameras still. Well, this is kind of like the phone version of those.
So it's
pretty cool what they've been able to do with it. It takes a little bit of mastering and learning how to actually do it, otherwise you're not going to see much of a difference, but once you kind of get the feeling down for it, I mean, you can do some pretty cool work with it. So yeah, it's called Stabilicam, I believe. So
yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, that's neat.
Yeah. What's it mean to live a life of abundance to you?
I think living a life of abundance is always being joyful, you know, being happiness, having a happiness around you, helping serve people, and really just being your authentic self. Because if you're your authentic self and you have all the joy and happiness around you, there's nothing that's going to stop you from doing anything in this world, being so successful. So I think that's, for me, is abundance, you know, thinking of those things.
Mm-hmm. And just kind of being... embracing who you are and being able to give the world that version of yourself.
Yeah, you have to, because so many people want to tighten up and, you know, fake it a little bit or be somebody else. No, you just got to be your authentic self. And when you do that, that's a life of abundance, because so many opportunities come at you. So many things come your way. And, you know, it's like people come to you masses and you're like, wow, you know, that's a real person. I need some help from him or her. And it's great.
If someone was wanting something different in their career, like go from, say, a lawyer to a financial planner, what are three steps that you suggest someone do if they wanted to start doing that?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the first things is, obviously, if you come to that point, you know, if you have a spouse or a significant other, you definitely want to sit down with that person and say, hey, this is what I'm feeling. I think it's time for a career change, because you want to keep that communication in your household healthy and happy. And that's absolutely critical. You just can't go out and start doing stuff. And then I think that's the critical thing. The number two thing is definitely, you know, do your research, get out there and look and see, you know, so if you want to do financial planning, do your research, see what certifications are needed, see what courses you need to take, see what's going to really cost you. Cause I think a lot of people say, oh, I wake up one day, yeah, I just don't want to do this. I want to be a nurse. I want to be, you know, a financial planner. I'm just going to go do it. And you start doing it. You got to plan a little bit and figure out what the cost is going to be. And then really the third thing is start, you know, interviewing places, like, you know, if you need to go to college, find some colleges that have those courses for you or certifications, interview people, get out there and actually talk to people in those positions. Because sometimes really I found that people, I'm just not willing to be a lawyer. They might be in a rut, and we get them out of rut. And the end need is not necessarily change your career. It's maybe getting into a different aspect of law versus going into financial planner. So you really want to talk to people who are in those industries to see if it's something you're really passionate about. Because if you can't wake up every day and, you know, not want to go to work, then it's not for you. You got to wake up every day ready to hit the ground running. And if you can't do that, then you're not in the right career field that you need to be in.
Right. Right. Regardless of whether it's the 9 to 5 or time, you know, day in and day out, whatever.
Exactly.
Or, you know, I'm just going to promote, you know, again, being your own boss and doing, having your own business like Joe and I do.
But, yeah, exactly.
So, Joe, where can people find you if they want to have additional help?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm pretty much all over social media, but if you go to my website, it's joewoo.com. It's joewoo.com. All my information's there, my contact information, social media, and just feel free to drop me a line. It's joe@joewoo.com. Very easy, and happy to respond to you. That's where you can find me.
And he's even on Anchor, guys.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm everywhere. Like I said, I'm on Anchor, Snapchat. Yeah. Everybody sees me and everything now.
Cool. Cool. All right. Well, Joe, definitely a pleasure having you on today. And yeah, thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, JC. This was great. I appreciate it.
And there you have it, girls and guys. I hope you enjoyed that chat with Joe Wu. You know, he reminds me a lot of myself. And frankly, if you know anyone that is struggling with their career but doesn't like the idea of starting their own business quite yet, then maybe you should, you know, maybe point them in Joe's direction. You know, just have them start listening to his podcast and see if they connect. If you want to connect with Joe yourself, you can do so just by going over to our show notes at newinceptions.com/61. Show note extras for this session includes several videos from Joe's own YouTube channel. Three are examples of what he teaches well. The final one is about his experience learning to be a firewalk instructor. Remember the whole Tony Robbins thing he was talking about? Yeah, he's one of those guys. So hopefully those will give you some perspective on how you can do short, quick videos yourself about something you know quite a bit about on. And a great way to fill up your library for potential clients. Again, thank you guys so much for joining us today. And as usual, if you've been listening to the show for a while, you know, let us know what you think. Leave a review on iTunes if you haven't done that yet, or send us your emails and suggestions at heyguys@newinceptions.com. Also, don't forget to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. Always talking to people on there. And definitely be sure to tag me on Twitter. In the next week's chat, I'm joined once again by the awesome Ginger Kern, we're actually known as the Ginger now, and as we talk with our mutual friend Cam Adair about his recent travels in Tanzania and the success he's had since session 8 of the Angles of Latitude podcast. You know, this is the first of hopefully several of what we're going to be calling Civil Editions, where we'll be talking to guests from some of our more popular episodes for a second time on the show and finding out what has really happened to them since the last time we spoke and giving you guys more tidbits of info from their personal journey. So yeah, definitely look forward to that one, as we actually just have a pretty casual conversation really about what he's been up to in the past year, and including what it's like to have a TEDx presentation on YouTube that's been viewed nearly 250,000 times, right? And really just finding out what all he's been able to achieve in the past year's time. So again, that's it for session 61. Again, thanks for joining Joe and myself today. And remember, and whatever you're doing, dig in. Have fun, take care, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter @newinceptions, or on the web @newinceptions.com.